Good morning. Welcome to Build 2013. My name is Vijay Rajagopalan. In this session, we are going to talk about building tiered applications using Windows Azure Cloud Services and virtual machines. Here is the agenda. I'll first introduce you to the compute choices on Windows Azure platform. Then we'll look at prescriptive patterns in terms of running high availability and high scalability. And we have a great customer evidence in the form of Heineken. They will come and talk about their experiences running Windows Azure applications at scale. And then I'll reinforce some of the lessons that they've learned in this to really put it in perspective for you to stitch things together in the Windows Azure compute platform. And I have lots of demos as we go through this session I'll be introducing to you as well. Windows Azure really pioneered the concept of a platform as a service when we launched 3 years back. Since then, we've had numerous releases. Last year, we introduced infrastructure as a service based on number of feedback we got from enterprise customers. And infrastructure as a service became generally available starting this April as well. So in this particular session, I'm here to introduce you how to bridge infrastructure as a service and cloud service compute resources so that you can run internet-scale cloud applications at scale. Windows Azure has data centers, physical data centers, all over the world. So depending on your application architecture and customer base, you can pick the data center that you want and deploy your solutions. At the fabric layer, we have the core compute, storage, and networking that provides great foundation for all the building block managed platform as a service, whether it's cache or service bus or media. These are the rich building block services that helps you to build internet scale applications. On top of all these things is all these services are exposed as open RESTful APIs so that you can build applications using your favorite choice of languages. All the SDKs that we distribute from Windows Azure are already contributed to GitHub under open source licensing to really reinforce the interoperability and openness of the platform. Let's now look at the compute options on Windows Azure. As I said, my primary goal for this session is really, since we've evolved as a platform as a service, compute platform, and added infrastructure as a service, there are a few really key scenarios that each of them meet. And I'm going to put them in perspective to really let you enable both infrastructure as a service as well as platform as a service capabilities. So let's look at what are the core value proposition of infrastructure, cloud services, web and worker role first. As you know, in order to run tiered application, front-end, middle tier, the canonical application, where you really get to focus on the app and not on the infrastructure, you can really spin up your application seamlessly, tiered application through the cloud services. And if you require advanced networking or advanced administrative capabilities, cloud services provides you as well, using the advanced networking protocols to connect back to on-premise, as well as manageability, where you can transition your existing skill set. So if you're a startup, and if you're trying to really add value to your customer to jump on to providing your domain expertise, not to worry about the infrastructure, cloud services is a fantastic value proposition for you. Virtual machines really enable you to bring your existing on-premise experience as well as on-premise workloads. So if you've already invested in Windows Server workloads, enterprise applications, you can seamlessly bring them onto Windows Azure. So most important scenario of infrastructure as a service is to light up the bread and butter Windows workloads, SQL Server, SharePoint, line of business applications, BizTalk, and all these scenarios. The second scenario that I would like to reinforce is the ability to do dev test on Windows Azure infrastructure as a service. With the recent announcement at TechEd, you can pay as you go, per minute billing, as well as stopping a VM without having to worry about it, provides you a great opportunity to run dev test on the cloud. Finally, it is an open platform. You have the choice of Windows servers as well as Linux. So for a heterogeneous workload, infrastructure as a service provides a great opportunity as well. Okay, and this is another spin on, I'm only concerned about building internet scale web workload. Which direction should I go? Websites or Windows Azure cloud services based web role? This is a commonly asked question that I get. My take on that is both of them offer unique services, and you can organically start from websites and graduate to web role. But if you are an enterprise and if you need advanced networking to your on-premise, for instance, a scenario could be you'll be running your web application workload on the internet on Windows Azure, but you, for security reason or due to privacy reasons, you may need to hold your database on-premise. In those cases, if you need advanced networking, you will bet on web role. And more importantly, many arbitrary frameworks, if you wanted to run Java on the cloud, if you wanted to run third-party frameworks, web role provides a deeper capability as well. All right. I'll just do a quick, since majority of you are already using Azure, I'll skim through some of these slides to get to the meat of this. As I said, cloud service is all about focusing on the app, not on the infrastructure. So you let the platform do the magic for you. Let me go through some of the core capabilities the platform provides. Consistent application updates. Because you are working on a stateless platform as a service model, you really focus on your app code. And when there is a hardware failure, when there is a service failing, we automatically spin up an identical VM with the same payload of your application code and install it. And we take care of all the instance management for you. You have the replica of all your instances running. We manage it completely from the platform. And all your software within the guest operating system are patched by Windows Azure with the highest availability guarantee as well. This is a core value prop where you get to focus on this. And a typical canonical app is you have a front end, middle tier, and database. The pattern that we've always talked about is use your persistent store in SQL Azure or in Windows Azure Storage. This is a canonical pattern. But in this session, I'm going to dig deeper on how do you use SQL Server running on virtual machine. What are the best practices? How do I create a security boundary and still have a high availability SQL Server running on infrastructure as a service while my front end and middle tier running using cloud services? How do I bridge it? What are the challenges today that exist as we are in this journey to bridge cloud services and infrastructure as a service? How do I overcome those limitations? Deploying is very simple. You think about the blueprint of your application, your payload, your configuration for the environment, and your application code which you zip up. And you use REST API, or you go to the service, or using the management portal, deploy your application. We take it to the Fabric controller. We look at the allocation where you wanted to spin up this workload. We automatically deploy in the appropriate infrastructure for you. So the three things that, as a modern platform as a service developer, you need to worry about are your blueprint of your application, which is your service definition, your configuration, where you wanted to deploy this application, and finally, your application code. These three things are the core pieces where you get to focus. Nothing about the infrastructure. The platform automatically takes care of everything. Patching .NET framework, Windows updates, and all your machines are taken care of, and you just get to focus on the domain. As many of you are following Windows Azure, we are continuing in this journey. We constantly have a very fast release cadence. The most recent SDK that we released for Windows Azure is the SDK that we shipped in April. The three things that I wanted to highlight for modern startup developers are support for high memory SKUs. If you're looking for cloud as a high performance computing, we have beefy machines right now. So that the machines A6 and A7, these are the new high mem SKUs that we have introduced that was released in the latest release. Finally, if you're looking for deeper diagnostics, our partners in Visual Studio have done a great job integrating diagnostics capability into the platform deeply. And finally, we have fantastic options for deploying your application in a really, really fast way. We've introduced a new knob in your publishing experience called simultaneous update. The simultaneous update really helps in a dev test scenario. If you wanted to not wait for the Fabric control to give you availability, it continues to simultaneously upgrade your services. Let me quickly show you so that you have a sense of what cloud services. I'm not going to do a whole demo of how to write a new application since many of you are aware. I'll touch on the key topics, key improvements that we have done in the most recent release. All right, so I've got Visual Studio here. Let me first start with the most simplest one. Let me switch back to the Solutions Explorer. The first one I want to show you is the deeper diagnostic support that we have added here. So when in your application today, when you enable diagnostics, enable diagnostics as an option, we have a knob here that allows you to specify the logging capability. This used to be a pain for a platform as a service developer where you have to muck up with this diagnostics config file, and once you deploy it, you can't change it. We have made it much, much simpler that you can dynamically change it through the extension model as well. So what you see here is that during my design time, I can figure out all the diagnostics data that I care about, and I can specify what I want. For instance, IIS logs, performance counters for response times. All the things that I want can be included right with this WYSIWYG user interface, and the configuration is captured as part of your application configuration. I'll just show you a sample of this diagnostics data. So when I run it in the local emulation environment, it actually populates in the local storage system. So when I run this application, I can go to the blob store in my local, and I can look at the data that I've got. All the response time that comes from it. You can get this from the management portal automatically as well. But here, during the development time, I can also look at my trace logs and what are some of the events that occurred in my application right within my application. So it gives you an easy way to configure your diagnostics and monitoring for your application and capture it during the development time as well as during the runtime as well. The second experience that I wanted to quickly highlight is essentially the notion of the new VM sizes, A6 and A7. One is 28 gig RAM, the other one, A7, is 56 gig RAM. So you can imagine doing, if you're into running a beefy worker process, for instance, number crunching application, big compute on the cloud, you have these new instance types as well. Finally, as you try to deploy this application, using the publish experience of from Visual Studio, we've introduced a new knob, particularly to accelerate the deployment time. This has been one of the key feedback that we received from many of you. As a result, what we have done here is that there is a knob in the publish experience in the advanced section. So if you go to the deployment update settings, there's a knob called simultaneous update. This is super, super handy. We encourage you to use it in a dev test scenario for accelerated deployment. When you select the simultaneous upgrade, we automatically update your code and the package into different, the fabric controller in a simultaneous way rather than letting the fabric do in a availability way. So that's the primary benefit of this. I wouldn't necessarily use this functionality in a production environment, but it's very handy. It really shaves your deployment time by close to about 70%. So these are the three quick things that I wanted to highlight with cloud services. Let me go back to my slide. So as a result, I just want you to leave with the notion that if you are a startup, If you're already sold on Windows Azure Compute, if you don't have any legacy code, I would really recommend you to start with Windows Azure Cloud Services to really focus on your app code rather than on the infrastructure. Moving on to virtual machines, many of you are already using virtual machine. The key value proposition is existing apps. If you're a Microsoft shop, invested tremendously in Microsoft Server workloads, SharePoint, SQL, Windows Azure is the best place to run Microsoft workloads. And we also support Linux, as I mentioned earlier. So if you have a heterogeneous workload, you can run it on Windows Azure. So what do we bring? When do you use virtual machine versus cloud services? If you have a lot of Windows workloads, line of business applications, you can transfer all of them nicely to Windows Azure. You can bring consistently your IT experiences, your administrators, operators within on-premise can easily transition all their skill sets to Windows Azure. We have a deep support for PowerShell to deploy your application in Windows Azure as well. Key server workloads, you will see all the server workloads shortly. And most importantly, as I mentioned, there is no lock-in here. You can move back and forth between on-premise and public, on-premise and Windows Azure seamlessly, because the BHD is itself is stored in your storage account. You can download it, and there is no lock-in completely. And high availability features, that's another critical piece for running SQL Server with a high availability mode, SharePoint in a production mode as well. Advanced networking, we recognize the need for customers having to connect to on-premise and having to connect to heterogeneous cloud services across cloud vendors and within Azure. So we have very deep advanced networking. In fact, the core of the meat of this talk will focus on that. How do we bridge cloud services, which is platform as a service, and infrastructure as a service? So we currently support many of these server workloads. So if you're an existing Microsoft shop, I think Windows Azure is a great place to run your application workloads. In TechEd, earlier this month, we announced some fantastic offers for DevTest specifically. I think that makes it even more a stronger value proposition for running your DevTest experience on Windows Azure. Let me walk through some of them. But I highly recommend you attend a session on Thursday at 2 p.m. My colleague Drew is giving a talk, specifically do a deep dive on DevTest. What are the best practices? What are the offer types? If you are an existing MSDN customer, how do you transition? All these things will be answered. I encourage you to attend Drew's session. So some of the key announcements we made at our TechEd are basically, you know, no charge for stopped VMs. This is a perfect scenario for DevTest. Thank you. We should have done it long back. So particularly when you are doing a large enterprise development, you know, the classic canonical scenario we hear is offshore development, on-premise, onshore development. You can stop a VM without having to worry that you are getting billed. That's a very key scenario for DevTest. The second scenario is per-minute billing. This is another, you know, in the past we used to round off to an hour. Now we are rounding off to a minute, which is really, really a great benefit for you to save a lot of money as well. Thank you. Finally, you translate all your MSDN rights for these server workloads to run on Windows Azure. Not only that, we have made it so easy with if you're an existing or if you're planning to subscribe to MSDN, there are great offers for different denominations of MSDN. We give you monthly credits. That itself is enough to run virtual machines for dev tests on Azure. So imagine that. I think if you're an MSDN customer, if you're not running Windows and Windows Server workloads on Azure, you're missing something. So I think it's a very natural process if you're trying out cloud for dev tests. Absolutely, you should leverage MSDN offer and move your workload on Windows Azure. I think for the sake of time, I may really quickly do a demo for people who haven't seen virtual machines from the portal, but I will zip through this one as well. So essentially, I just want to show you a couple of points. I talked about no lock-in. Bring your own VM scenario, which is what I am planning on showing right now. So when I start a Windows Azure virtual machine, I go to the gallery. You get to see all the platform-supported gallery of images. These are the platform images that Microsoft supports, the all our server products, such as Windows Server, SQL, SharePoint, BizTalk. And not only that, we, as I mentioned earlier, we are working with our publisher partners for SUSE, Ubuntu as well. What I'm going to do right now is I'm going to do my images section. You see a couple of servers that I brought from my offshore team. They gave me a VHD file of their legacy application that needs to be tested on Windows Azure. I have the VHD sysprepped image that was sent to me. I uploaded to Windows Azure. This is actually backed against my storage account. This VHD file is in my storage account. And then I can create a new instance right from here. So that's a significant value proposition. If you already have a virtualized on-prem Windows infrastructure, you can seamlessly move VHDs back and forth. So I'll switch back to my slides. All right, now that I've level set all cloud services, how do we, you know, mix these two things? What works today? What doesn't work today? Because we are in this phase of iterating both the products in a simultaneous way. I just want to make sure you understand what are the caveats of bridging them to today, what are the security risks of bridging them, what really works, and give you some guidance in terms of how do you bridge these together. First thing, when you create a cloud service from web and worker role perspective, what it really means is cloud service as a container is essentially the management, configuration, security, and network and model boundary. You know, the cloud service, the name itself for web and worker role is very tight. The unit of work for web and worker role is at a cloud service level. So whenever you do an update, we look at it from a cloud service angle. Any communication that happens between the roles within a cloud service are all secure, and all the context for code changes, config changes are done in that context. So when you spin up multiple instances also, that holds true. We have a replica of your source in the model. When you scale out, we copy that in a new virtual machine, so it's all identical. So cloud service from a platform as a service perspective is essentially the security boundary. However, in a virtual machine, you might have noticed, when you create a new virtual machine, we have an intrinsic cloud service that gets created, but you don't have a visibility to that until you create a new virtual machine in the same cloud service. This has caused a lot of confusion for developers. Hey, what does this mean? Does this mean that I'm running in a high available model? These type of questions are constantly asked in the forums and other places. So when you create a virtual machine, we create a container called cloud service as well here. But when you create multiple virtual machines, you really get to see the cloud service behind these two things. And further, today, as of today, you cannot deploy both web and worker role and cloud and virtual machines under the same container called cloud services. That is blocked today. So this is what you need to remember. There is a container for virtual machines for cloud services, and then there is a traditional platform as a service cloud services. How do I bridge these two things? So in my future references, I will reference virtual machines for the infrastructure as a service and cloud service for the web and worker role scenario. So in this case, I just want to call out that your application is not guaranteed by SLA in this particular model. Just because you have two VMs in a cloud service doesn't mean that you have high availability for your application. Okay. So let's talk about how do we bridge these two things together. As mentioned earlier, I just want you to, there has been a, Windows Azure pioneered the concept of platform as a service. In that regard, we sort of created a wall between IaaS developers and cloud services developer. I just want you to step away from this and see how you can bridge all these things together. Obviously, there are a lot of benefits, as I mentioned earlier in past. You have faster development. You just get to focus on the domain. It's very cheap to run because we have identical instances. You don't have to train your staff. It's super easy to run. Manageability, operationally, you're not at all dependent on anyone. The platform does it everything for you. So when there is a need, absolutely, I would encourage you to start with cloud services when you're starting something new to the cloud. But connecting these cloud services and virtual machines is today slightly tricky. I want you to leave with three patterns today that really, really works that I will show with a lot of demos as well. The first pattern is well known. You connect cloud services and virtual machines over the internet through the virtual IP. This is essentially just like connecting web and worker role to Windows Azure storage using the SAS key, or connecting web and worker role to SQL Azure using a connection string. You're going over the internet, going over the load balancer. This, in some cases, may not be the best security practice. In large IT, mature IT organizations, they don't recommend putting a SQL server in your DMZ zone, in the WIP. You need to protect the SQL server. So this, if it works for many organizations, this pattern is something that we have prescribed in the past, connecting to SQL Azure, connecting to storage and others. That works already. The second pattern, I will go deeper, which is you have a cloud service running. you have a virtual machine running under a cloud service container. Hey, I want to stitch them together so that I have a really fast connectivity, secure connectivity between them. You can take it further to connect your on-premise also, which is not something I will cover today. I'm going to cover how do you connect public cloud to public clouds running on Windows Azure using different compute technologies. Finally, many of you have asked for, hey, dev test is great, but I don't want my IT team to learn a lot of things and do the development in an insecure way. We are doing a lot of projects for our clients. We wanted to do the SQL Server development in a secure way. I want my dev team to know that they are connecting to a server around the corner. I just want to have a point to site connectivity in a deeper way. So that's the third pattern I will be talking about as well. Okay, the first one, as I said earlier, it's not new. It's very straightforward. You are connecting cloud service to IaaS, virtual machine, using the public virtual IP. Obviously, it's simple. I just wanted to. I want you to leave with the benefits of this. The first thing is that your database team or the team that's running on IaaS is separated from the modern web and worker role team. Both teams can iterate on their own cadence. It is so simple. You're not doing a massive deployment of all these things. It can coexist. Many of the platform as a service capabilities you can leverage. For instance, in a typical stateless scenario, you just whip swap between your staging to production slot. Those things you can continue to exercise. When you mix stateless web and worker role with a persistent VM, these things become very tricky. So by keeping this separate, you can continue to take advantage of all the platform as a service capability as well as the IaaS capability. They can coexist simultaneously. Easy dev test. Your team can seamlessly dev test this without having to cross through many of the IT policies and other things. And the persistent services are available from other services as well. The weakness is, obviously, depending on where you're deployed, your database, there is definitely latency in this model. Because you're going over the web, there is going to be latency. It is less secure. I don't know how many IT organizations, depending on this audience, I would like to know, how many of you can put a SQL Server on your web? Is it, if you could raise your hand, how many of you do this pattern in today in your real-world scenario? Yeah, so no, but if you think about it, many modern cloud-based applications don't consider SQL Azure or accessing Hadoop or any other third-party storage. They go over HTTPS in this model. This is completely acceptable as well. But from a mature IT organization perspective, this is a non-supported model. Which is why it's a plain and simple, clear text connection string which can be hashed and other things. This is a recommended process. Let's talk about the second model. Okay, connecting over virtual network. I think this model gives you a virtual network between your two heterogeneous cloud services. One running on virtual machines, the other one on cloud services. This is far more secure. Low latency, because connectivity between your front end web and worker role to your database running on infrastructure as a service is going through the direct IP, internal IPs. So it's fast as well as secure. It's going to be tricky in this model. Also, you can continue to do whip swaps and other platform as a service capabilities. The VNet learning curve is the one that you need to go through. Many of non-sophisticated IT organizations will have tougher time learning how do I, without the help of a network administrator, how do I set up VNets? How do I deploy this into VNet? How do I educate my developers to deploy into a particular VNet? This is a concept that is evolving in the platform today. We don't have a lot of sophisticated tools to make it easy as of today. So I will show you some tricks how you can do that. So before I do that, I'll jump onto the demo so you'll get to know all of them nicely. I'll quickly come to this slide also later. The final one, as I mentioned earlier, how do you do secure development? I want all my on-premise developers who are working on a very secure project with the database in a safe mode. How do I establish the VNet-based point-to-site connectivity so that my machines are connected in a secure way? This is the third model. This is really, really powerful for dev test scenario, and most importantly, for moving large databases, doing database application development, where you have to move bulk copy data and other things that requires high bandwidth. This is a best method for doing, you know, dev tests as well as secure database development as well, where the sensitivity of the data is important. So let me jump onto the demo so you will know all of them first. So how do you maximize the best of compute on Windows Azure is the goal of this demonstration. Before that, I will first go through the simplest thing. So what I'm going to do is essentially I will show you two services running here. If you look at my virtual machine, I have the build SQL. Right now, it is a single instance virtual machine. And I also have a cloud service that is called the build inventory web tier. These need to be, they were developed by two different teams. I now need to make sure that they talk to each other in a secure way. And I need to know how to do development as well. That's a goal behind it. So these are all deployed already. The way you do this is essentially by creating a virtual network. And it is quite straightforward to do it. You can create a virtual network. I'll give it a friendly name here. You specify the name. If you're bringing DNS servers from on-premise, you do that. But in this particular case, since I am interested in creating a point to site, my desktop or my laptop to be connected to a virtual network, I'm creating a point-to-site experience here. And then I will add subnets. I'll add address spaces here. I'm going to pick this one for now, the default option. And then I'm going to add a few subnets so that I can deploy different workloads in different virtual networks. For instance, if it's a canonical three-tier application, I could say SQL Server, just a second. I'll rename this. I have a front-end subnet. And then I'll also a gateway subnet for my gateway, which is the intermediary to build this VNet. So this takes a few minutes. While it's creating a virtual network, I'll show you what I had already done for this demo. The build VNet was also created in a similar fashion. If you look at the how it is configured, as you can notice here, the build SQL virtual machine is deployed into the SQL subnet, which is my infrastructure as a service. I also have a Hadoop-based big data compute that's running on a virtual machine in an Ubuntu VM, which is also deployed in the middle tier subnet. And then I have a web role with multiple instances deployed into a front-end subnet. This is the canonical topology of an N-tier application, where you have middle tier doing big data compute and SQL. This is all set up. The greatest thing about this is that once it's created, I will come back to this, and I need to upload my client certificate to authenticate my desktop here. But in this particular case, I have already done that. So what it does is, once you do that, Windows Azure gives you, it automatically in the runtime generates a VPN client for you to establish a secure connectivity between your laptop and to the virtual network. So right now, for instance, I have this VPN client for 64-bit as well as for 32-bit. I've already downloaded it. You can, when I click the network setting, you will see the build VNet already connected as well. For the sake of this demo, I will disconnect and reconnect it so you know how it works. I will go ahead and reconnect to this build VNet. What is happening is I am authenticating my current laptop to connect to this virtual network. I will connect to this. It's just like a normal VPN client, and it's using the certificate, it authenticates my laptop. Now, I have a secure channel between my laptop to the SQL server running in Windows Azure. As you notice here, the build SQL server has the internal IP address of the 10-dot address. That is the address space that we did when we created this VNet. So what it's so funny, I could simply go to remote desktop here and use the, as a matter of fact, I'm already running the remote desktop. Let me close this so you'll know what I mean. So I basically, it's like server running next to me. I'm using the 10-dot address space here. I'm connecting to the SQL server, doing SQL server development, just like how I do on-premise. I can move large data. I'm not going through the public infrastructure in Windows Azure to connect to it and uploading large amount of data over HTTP or doing computation using SQL Management Studio from client to the server running in the cloud. I'm having a direct connectivity to this box. I can move data. I can access this machine just like any other my front-end machines to improve my productivity. So that's a point I just wanted to highlight. Because of which, when I go to Visual Studio, in the Server Explorer also, I can see this machine as a first-class machine right next to me. I can go to Management Studio and look at all the tables and process all the SQL Server-related work right within my IDE as well. Finally, let me show you another fun thing here. Because it's I'm running this application, I could run it in the local emulation environment. As you notice here, I'm running it in the emulation environment. It is using, in the connection string, it is using the 10-dot address space, just like how this machine would be, how you would use it in on-premise to connect to this machine. As it opens up, let me show the config file, so you will notice what configuration we have. So as you notice here, the connection string for this is just a 10-dot address space. It is. I'm running a SQL server in cloud using a 10-dot address space that has a private channel between my laptop, and I'm running it. So this app should be running. I can see in the emulator, the app should have spun up the website by now. Let's see. Yeah, it's right here. I can run it here. So you can see the IP address. It is a local IP address here from my local machine. Hope it will run. Okay, good. So it is accessing data from the cloud through my local IP address running from the emulator. I can also show you the same application running in the cloud, which is already deployed, right here. So you can see here, I can add a new item here, and it will show up side by side. Just to demonstrate that whatever changes you are making in the public cloud will reflect here, as well as it's a very fast dev test experience. Let's go ahead and add a small item here, so that you'll see the changes right here. Put some dummy data here. All right, if it's added, I'll go ahead and refresh here. This is our live emulator running against the same database as well. Did I click create? I hope it created. Let's go ahead and refresh it. Good. So the point I'm trying to make here is that this is one way of securing your laptops and client access to public cloud in a secure dev test model. Let me show you a couple of other things. As an extension of this, you can also integrate your cloud service to TFS in the cloud. If you wanted to do build server and continuous integration in the cloud, you can extend this further and integrate to TFS in the cloud as well, which is very, very straightforward. And once you integrate that, you can run your whole build server from the cloud itself. So, for instance, for this project, I'm already running the build in the cloud. This is going through a secure channel. It is running in Windows Azure. As you see here, I have integrated my build server in the cloud for this project, and all my past builds are showing up. I can whip swap between the old builds seamlessly as well. So this is an extension of how you can take this further and integrate your build server in the cloud also using this secure channel. So just to summarize the demo that I did, the simple connectivity is good for certain scenarios. Bridge use VNet to connect cloud services running web and worker role and virtual machines. And finally, do the point-to-site connectivity for secure, accelerated database development and dev test connectivity as well. Let me switch gears back to my slides. Finally, I'm going to introduce quickly to high availability. So as I mentioned earlier, just because you have multiple instances running doesn't mean that you have high availability. So in our observation, looking at the data of customer patterns, we noticed that a lot of web and worker role customers are running single instance. So I wanted to call this out. When you are running single instance, we don't guarantee SLA for you in Windows Azure. So it's always a good practice to have multiple instances. So in a cloud service model, we have the concept of upgrade domains, update domains, and fault domains to how to do the updates for your application. So when you are deploying your application, your web and worker roles are, when they are multi-instance, they are deployed in a different updates and fault domains, guaranteeing availability. So when we are doing a host OS update or a guest OS update or any upgrades and other things, we automatically make sure that we recognize the upgrade domains and fault domains you have and take down your server in that round-robin manner. And this concept also exists in a different way in virtual machines. I just want to introduce you to that. So in virtual machines, when you create VMs, you have the notion of availability sets. So before you create a virtual machine, you need to create an availability set. And when you're trying to deploy your VMs, make sure you deploy into the availability set. I hope my slides are moving. I had some difficulty. So in this particular example, I have two virtual machines. I wanted to have a load balance to two IIS virtual machines and SQL machines. I could seamlessly enable high availability by deploying the SQL machines in a particular availability set and web machines, IIS, in a different availability set. So this way, my IaaS will also be guaranteed for high availability of 99.95 SLA. So make sure while you're creating virtual machines, when you're trying to bridge PaaS and IaaS, make sure you use the availability set concept for IaaS so that you'll have consistent availability between PaaS and IaaS. So at this stage, I'm very, very pleased and excited also to introduce my friends from Heineken who have done this in a great scale. This is a pattern that they will reinforce in their demo as well. I just wanted to capture a highly available mixed mode scenario where you have backend in the running on infrastructure as a service using an availability set, and you have multiple instances of web role running using cloud services, and they are stitched together within a virtual network, providing you high availability. So at this stage, I would like to invite my friends, Ewart, Eric, and Dennis from Beertown of Netherlands. They're going to talk about their experiences deploying Heineken's web portal in a great scale on Windows Azure. Welcome.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, so that's us. My name is Ewout Barendrecht. I'm the manager of the web center of in Heineken, at the head office, headquarters in Amsterdam. And we're a team of 20 people, project managers, consulting, and we help our global brands teams with their digital initiatives. We have Eric and Dennis, and they'll introduce themselves shortly. So.
Kamaya,
Yeah, this should make you thirsty, right? So, and what does it have to do with Windows Azure? Well, I'll tell you all about that. First, I'd like to tell you that I'm very excited to stand here before our target audience. So, mostly men of legal drinking age, resourceful, open to new experiences. So, I'm very happy about that. So, the video that you just saw shows the man of the world. So that's our big thing. So let me just look at my notes. Indeed, this is the video of the TV commercial from our campaign, the latest campaign, the Road to the Final. And the Road to the Final is the campaign for. Can I go to the next slide? For the UEFA Champions League soccer games. So one of the things we did in this campaign is create an online game. It's just a simple pinball game. But the idea is here that you connect to all your Facebook friends and you challenge them to the game. And one of the complicated things here is that we do not have one high score, but the high score is always computed relative to your friends. So, usually what... I don't know if you work with your marketing colleagues, but usually when they have a great idea, they're really enthusiastic about that. And then they don't care about technical details, right? So they came to us and they said, well, we have a snag here because we want to get maximum traction to this game. We're going to ask a few of our celebrities that we know to tweet about this. And all of their followers will go to the site. So we said, so how many concurrent users do you expect? They don't know the concept usually of concurrent users, but so how many people will come to the site? We don't know. Maybe a million people at the same time. So that's pretty complex. And then they came to us and they said, you just have to make it work, right? So what does it mean here? We have a flash game. The flash game needs to connect with every session to Facebook, get all your friends, compute the relative high score, the leaderboard. It needs to be available across the globe. I mean, we sell beer in 178 countries, so everywhere it must be available, and it must be fast, right? So, I guess you can see where we're going with the Azure thing, how we use that. So why did we choose Azure? So, of course, it's a cost-effective solution for us to scale quickly. We used the capability to provide low latency across the globe by not only by using the CDN, but also having the application run simultaneously in four data centers. And we have peace of mind. We load tested this heavily. And in essence, finally, we had a great campaign running on the Azure platform. So we can safely say that the Azure platform is really good for these global scale campaigns. So with that, I'd like to introduce Dennis, who helped us envision and create the architecture for this.
So I'm Dennis Mulder. I work for Microsoft and help Heineken on several of these projects. What I'd like to illustrate with this is the architecture behind this at a fairly high level, and walk you through that, and then Eric will take over and show you some things running in Windows Azure. So obviously we'll have a lot of users visiting this, as the figures tell, but we're not ready to disclose the numbers. The services we use is YouTube is playing that video. We obviously use Facebook for the campaign to go viral, and it did go viral. And the Windows Azure CDN is where we host the game, the Flash game itself. On the Azure side, we have a web API running in a cloud service, in a web role specifically, that has three APIs. One is sign-in, second is score, and the third is leaderboard. And you may wonder, like, that's fairly simple, right? A simple call to sign in and a simple call to record a score of a pinball game and then a leaderboard. The challenge is, though, as Ewout illustrated, is that we have millions of leaderboards because you have different friends than your friend next to you. And typically those friends are global as well, right? You have friends in the US, friends in Europe, friends in Asia, maybe, at least I do. So those challenges are things we had to overcome. Then there are some other capabilities in Windows Azure that we needed, right? Table storage is where we store our Facebook user IDs as well as the score on which we base the calculation of the leaderboard. Blob storage is used to store the flash video and then surface it through the Windows Azure CDN. And then we have some queues and worker roles on that. I'll get back to you in a bit. So the first thing the user would do is browse to Facebook, click on facebook.com/Heineken, look for the campaign, and launch the campaign. Or rather, click on a link one of your friends shared on your wall. Then you would download the Flash game, and the Flash game would connect to the web API to do sign-in, score, and leaderboard. And here's where it gets interesting in the architecture. We wanted to make sure that sign-in, score, as well as leaderboard are just always there, even in disastrous scenarios where things go wrong. So what we did is we separated the reads from the writes, and you may say, what's a read, what's a write? So basically, the leaderboard is the thing that needed scale, and that is our only read method. So even a sign-in and a score are our write methods, which go through a queue to get you the right response. So the leaderboard is the one that we calculate real-time, live, against table storage, in a synchronous way, because we cannot pre-calculate like millions of leaderboards. For that, in table storage, we ended up with 10,000 partitions to reach the scale that we needed. Initially, we started with only 10, which didn't scale in the way we needed it to scale. In terms of writes, so when you finish the game and your score needs to be recorded, we always do that through a queue. And then we have a worker role that syncs that score message and stores it in table storage. The worker is architected and designed such that it will back off when table storage is busy serving like leaderboard and read sync requests, which has a user connected to it. We also use queues because we needed to replicate this data. We wanted this to be extremely highly available and extremely low latency worldwide in this worldwide campaign. So we store every message four times in four queues in every data center and then replicate it across the globe. This is roughly how that would look. So four data centers, one data center where your score would be stored, right? The blue one would go to all the other ones. But your friends may end up in other data centers where the same process happens. So in essence, we have like 16 queues to do this replication. Now the challenge was also the number AWOD provided, right? Is 1 million game plays per hour. To be honest, I think, yeah, the guy also had to make it up, the business guy, right? It's always with these numbers. So we wanted to prove that our system was capable of handling this, and even if it didn't handle it, that we would be able to predictably scale up so that the system would be able to handle it. And that's where IaaS and cloud services come together. Our architecture was deployed like this, right? A web role, table storage and worker roles, and the queues on the right end. We deployed a Visual Studio load testing cluster in Windows Azure Virtual Machines to run multiple load tests to incrementally improve on our architecture, improve on our code to land on the 1 million game plays per hour, which is what our target was. And then we knew basically which size of machines we had, how many API calls we could handle per machine so that we could predictably scale to the three other data centers. I think this is crucial when doing Windows Azure development. I run into a lot of projects on Windows Azure, and there are still people that think that a non-scalable app scales in the cloud. Well, I can guarantee you that's not the case. Make sure you do scale testing on this. Even with our architecture, we spend a lot of time there. We hit it on some bottlenecks. Initially, our bottleneck was in table storage because we didn't have enough partitions. You only find this out when you do some scale testing at the scale you anticipate in production. So with that, I'd like to hand over to Eric to show us some coolness in the Windows Azure portal.
Hi guys, my name is Eric Jensen. I work for Heineken as a technical consultant, so I can make these great campaigns come alive. I'll show you the Windows Azure portal so you can see what we have running here. See if I'm still logged on. Okay, so now you're looking at the production environment of the campaign you just watched and saw Dennis explaining. I filtered the subscriptions out, so this is only production. So first have a look at storage. What you can see here is the different storage accounts that we have for this project. We ended up having 6 different storage accounts per data center, so we could leverage the performance that the storage accounts give us if we divert them, how do you say, multiply them. So on cloud services, here you can see our geographical replication going on. These are the 4 cloud services that are doing the computing, Eastern Asia, East US, and so forth. So we'll have a look at Northern Europe. As you can see, we have quite a little bit of compute going on there. This was mainly because of the load testing that we did, Dennis just talked about. We found out that for the web role, it was best to have a medium-sized instance, and for the sync workers, we needed several small instances to get the queues empty. Of course, if you look at the scaling, this is what we leveraged when we were live. Of course, here we would have the possibilities to scale stuff up and down as we went, which we did around marketing initiatives and social virality. Let's have a look. Final look at the. Okay, don't want to save this. The virtual machines. So this is actually the load test rig. This is where we installed the virtual machines with Visual Studio Test Center on them. So we could highly scale this up, delivering us the power needed for doing the load test. Imagine doing a load test on 1 million per hour. That's hard to do from your laptop.
You're not built when it's in a stop mode.
Exactly. So this is, you want to say this? So as VJ is saying it, we've stopped these VMs. So they are there for us to leverage if we need updates and stuff, but they're stopped now, so we don't pay for them since early June. Okay, let's get back to the slides. Oh, this is a pity. Yeah, well, so it doesn't matter. The slide is broke. But what I want to give you is, like Dennis is saying, we had some trouble leveraging the scalability. So we went from 7,000 an hour to 1 million in an hour. And there are 4 main things that we've discovered. One of these is don't use complex OR queries. So if you need more records from table storage, just do them just make separate queries. And not do a lot of OR queries on them. The other one is make many partitions. Like Dennis was saying, we did 10 partitions at first and ended up with 10,000. Of course, that causes you to do a lot of querying. And that brings us to the third one. Don't do querying sequentially. We used the task parallel library for that, making the querying do asynchronously in parallel, that boosted performance. And what we also found out was if you're querying something that isn't in there, it's more expensive actually than if it would be there. So it's like 1.5 times more expensive than a hit, so to speak. So yeah, I hope you guys are a little bit inspired of this real world example. I know I love to do this, and yeah, we're hiring solution architects in Amsterdam, so if you like creating world-class digital campaigns, please contact us.
Thank you, guys. Thanks to the Brewers. And by the way, the last sentence wasn't rehearsed. So anyway, while they were doing it, I just wanted to reinforce a few points that they captured, essentially. So basically, make sure you design for scale, whether you're going in the infrastructure as a service or platform as a service. Make sure you architect for scale. And availability, make sure you understand what is what is covered under SLA. You know, in the Heineken example, how they managed to provide high availability for leaderboard and high transaction scorecard scenarios, and certain scenarios that doesn't require such an amount of SLA, you architect it in such a way and deploy in a different manner where you're not concerned about high SLA. And interoperability, use open APIs so that it can be plugged and interoperable across the clouds as well. And finally, it's most importantly, make sure it's operations ready. As you move into a paradigm shift into the cloud, when you're stitching things together, how are we going to manage? Your on-premise administrators are using some of their homegrown products and system center and others. In the cloud, some of them are deployed differently. So make sure you think through the operational aspect, live site, supportability aspect as you're designing the application. I will switch back to my demo for a second because I didn't get to complete one point, but it is still creating. Remember the virtual network that we created that I was planning to connect to my laptop. I also, while the demo was going on, I also started the gateway. And once this is done, it will. And I need to upload my root certificate using the certificate option. And after that, just like the previously built virtual network, you will see the VPN client option on your right-hand side, just like that. I'll just show you in the previously configured one. This is important for you to know. And after that, you can download the VPN client and connect to the SQL Server running in the cloud seamlessly. It is taking a little longer than anticipated. Usually, the gateway takes about 6 to 7 minutes. It's taking a little bit longer. The other thing that we didn't cover is today it's very, remember the second pattern that I talked about, how do I stitch cloud services, web and worker role, and virtual machine? It requires some advanced network settings. This part, we don't have great tooling today. So we have a good documentation around it. When you are trying to deploy your application, if you need to deploy into VNet, you need this configuration in your cloud service configuration file. So as you notice here, I'm deploying this web and worker role into the build VNet virtual network. And I want the front end to be deployed into the associated with the inventory web subnet group. And I have created the subnet called front end as well. So this role is now bound to the front end subnet. That's what it means. This portion, we don't have tooling and effective documentation today, and which is one of the reasons a lot of cloud services developers are unable to deploy. And we will make sure there is good tooling in the future as well. So please remember that. Before you deploy your cloud service, you need to have this in order to deploy into a virtual network. And after that, your virtual network and virtual machines deployed onto the same VNet can talk to each other in a secure manner. So those three patterns I would like you to leave away for bridging Windows Azure compute from IaaS and cloud services perspective. Switching back to the slide, just one last thing. There are a couple of good sessions today. I talked briefly about the diagnostics capability in cloud service. There's a talk by my colleague Boris later today, I think. It's 5 p.m. Please attend it. That'll give you a very deep dive into how do you troubleshoot cloud services, the integration of Windows Azure Diagnostics module, that part. And tomorrow, there is a session focused on DevTest. It's pure IaaS. If you wanted to maximize your IaaS investments, if you're a Windows shop, and if you're an MSDN customer, how do you do that? That'll all be covered in the second session as well. So with that, I take this opportunity to thank you all for listening, and I'll be around for if you have any questions. I think we are slightly out of time right now. Thank you again.